Chapter 19. SE has floated through her winter and through her summer. She is a year nearer unto death, for I did not fail to see that, as she came into the shade, her shadow fell from her and was swallowed up in the dark water, making its blackness more black. And again the boat appeared and the Fae, but about the attitude of the latter there was more of care and uncertainty, and less of elastic joy. She floated again from out the light, and into the gloom which deepened momently, and again her shadow fell from her into the ebony water, and became absorbed into its blackness. And again she made the circuit of the island, while the sun rushed down to his slumbers, and at each issuing into the light there was more sorrow about her person, while it grew feebler and far fainter and more indistinct, and at each passage into the gloom there fell from her a darker shade, which became whelmed in a shadow more black. But at length when the sun had utterly departed, the Fae, now the mere ghost of her former self, went disconsolately with her boat into the region of the ebony flood, and that she issued thence at all I cannot say, for darkness fell over and things and I beheld her magical figure no more. End of text. The assignation, stay for me there. I will not fail to meet thee in that hollow vale.
Exequy on the death of his wife, by Henry King, Bishop of Chichester.
Ill-fated and mysterious man, bewildered in the brilliance of thine own imagination, and fallen in the flames of thine own youth. Again in fancy I behold thee. Once more thy form hath risen before me, not as thou art in the cold valley and shadow, but as thou shouldst be squandering away a life of magnificent meditation in that city of dim visions, thine own Venice which is a star-beloved Elysium of the sea, and the wide windows of whose Palladian palaces look down with a deep and bitter meaning upon the secrets of her silent waters. Yes, I repeat it as thou shouldst be. There are surely other worlds than this, other thoughts than the thoughts of the multitude, other speculations than the speculations of the sophist. Who then shall call thy conduct into question? Who blame thee for thy visionary hours, or denounce those occupations as a wasting away of life, which were but the overflowings of thine everlasting energies? It was at Venice, beneath the covered archway there called the Ponte Isospori, that I met for the third or fourth time the person of whom I speak. It is with a confused recollection that I bring to mind the circumstances of that meeting. Yet I remember how should I forget? The deep midnight, the bridge of sighs, the beauty of woman, and the genius of romance, that stalked up and down the narrow canal. It was a night of unusual gloom. The great clock of the piazza had sounded the fifth hour of the Italian evening. The square of the Campanile lay silent and deserted, and the lights in the old Ducal Palace were dying fast away. I was returning home from the piazzetta, by way of the Grand Canal. But as my gondola arrived opposite the mouth of the Canal San Marco, a female voice from its recesses broke suddenly upon the night, in one wild, hysterical, and long-continued shriek. Startled at the sound, I sprang upon my feet while the gondolier, letting slip his single oar, lost it in the pitchy darkness beyond a chance of recovery, and we were consequently left to the guidance of the current which here sets from the greater into the smaller channel. Like some huge and sable-feathered condor, we were slowly drifting down towards the bridge of sighs, when a thousand flambeaux flashing from the windows, and down the staircases of the Ducal Palace, turned all at once that deep gloom into a livid and preternatural day. A child, slipping from the arms of its own mother, had fallen from an upper window of the lofty structure into the deep and dim canal. The quiet waters had closed placidly over their victim, and, although my own gondola was the only one in sight, many a stout swimmer, already in the stream, was seeking in vain upon the surface the treasure which was to be found, alas, only within the abyss. Upon the broad black marble flagstones at the entrance of the palace, and a few steps above the water, stood a figure which none who then saw, can have ever since forgotten.
It was the Marchesa Aphrodite, the adoration of all Venice, the gayest of the gay, the most lovely, where all were beautiful, but still the young wife of the old and intriguing Montoni, and the mother of that fair child, her first and only one, who now, deep beneath the murky water, was thinking in bitterness of heart upon her sweet caresses, and exhausting its little life in struggles to call upon her name. She stood alone. Her small, bare, and silvery feet gleamed in the black mirror of marble beneath her. Her hair, not as yet more than half loosened for the night from its ballroom array, clustered, amid a shower of diamonds, round and round her classical head, in curls like those of the young hyacinth. A snowy white and gauze-like drapery seemed to be nearly the sole covering to her delicate form. But the midsummer and midnight air was hot, sullen, and still, and no motion in the statue-like form itself stirred even the folds of that raiment of very vapor which hung around it as the heavy marble hangs around the niob. Yet strange to say, her large lustrous eyes were not turned downwards upon that grave wherein her brightest hope lay buried, but riveted in a widely different direction. The prison of the old republic is, I think, the stateliest building in all Venice, but how could that lady gaze so fixedly upon it, when beneath her lay stifling her only child? Yon dark, gloomy niche too, yawns right opposite her chamber window, what, then, could there be in its shadows, in its architecture, in its ivy-wreathed and solemn cornices, that the Marchesa di Mentini had not wondered at 1,000 times before? Nonsense! Who does not remember that, at such a time as this, thy, like a shattered mirror, multiplies the images of its sorrow, and sees in innumerable far-off places, the woe which is close at hand. Many steps above the Marchesa, and within the arch of the water gate, stood, in full dress, the satyr-like figure of Montoni himself. He was occasionally occupied in thrumming a guitar, and seemed nigh to the very death, as at intervals he gave directions for the recovery of his child. Stupefied and aghast, I had myself no power to move from the upright position I had assumed upon first hearing the shriek, and must have presented to the eyes of the agitated group a spectral and ominous appearance, as with pale countenance and rigid limbs, I floated down among them in that funereal gondola. All efforts proved in vain. Many of the most energetic in the search were relaxing their exertions, and yielding to a gloomy sorrow. There seemed but little hope for the child, how much less than for the mother. But now, from the interior of that dark niche which has been already mentioned as forming a part of the old Republican prison, and as fronting the lattice of the Marchesa, a figure muffled in a cloak stepped out within reach of the light, and, pausing a moment upon the verge of the giddy descent, plunged headlong into the canal. As, in an instant afterwards, he stood with the still living and breathing child within his grasp, upon the marble flagstones by the side of the Marchesa, his cloak, heavy with the drenching water, became unfastened, and, falling in folds about his feet, discovered to the wonder-stricken spectators the graceful person of a very young man, with the sound of whose name the greater part of Europe was then ringing. No word spoke the deliverer, but the Marchesa. She will now receive her child, she will press it to her heart, she will cling to its little form, and smother it with her caresses. Alas! Another's arms have taken it from the stranger, another's arms have taken it away, and borne it afar off, unnoticed, into the palace! Exclamation point. And the Marchesa. Her beautiful lip trembles, colon, tears are gathering in her eyes, those eyes which, like Pliny's acanthus, are oft and almost liquid. Yes. Tears are gathering in those eyes, and see, the entire woman thrills throughout the soul, and the statue has started into life. The pallor of the marble countenance, the swelling of the marble bosom, the very purity of the marble feet, we behold suddenly flushed over with a tide of ungovernable crimson, and a slight shudder quivers about her delicate frame, as a gentle air at Napoli about the rich silver lilies in the grass. Why should that lady blush? To this demand there is no answer except that, having left, in the eager haste and terror of a mother's heart, the privacy of her own boudoir, she has neglected to enthrall her tiny feet in their slippers, and utterly forgotten to throw over her Venetian shoulders that drapery which is their due. What other possible reason could there have been for her, so blushing ? For the glance of those wild appealing eyes? For the unusual tumult of that throbbing bosom? For the convulsive pressure of that trembling hand? That hand which fell, as Menton I turned into the palace, accidentally, upon the hand of the stranger. What reason could there have been for the low, the singularly low tone of those unmeaning words which the lady uttered hurriedly in bidding him adieu ? Who hast conquered, she said, or the murmurs of the water deceived me. Who hast conquered 1 hour after sunrise we shall meet, so let it be ? The tumult had subsided, the lights had died away within the palace, and the stranger, whom I now recognized, stood alone upon the flags. He shook with inconceivable agitation, and his eye glanced around in search of a gondola. I could not do less than offer him the service of my own, and he accepted the civility. Having obtained an oar at the water gate, we proceeded together to his residence, while he rapidly recovered his self-possession, and spoke of our former slight acquaintance in terms of great apparent cordiality. There are some subjects upon which I take pleasure in being minute. The person of the stranger, let me call him by this title, who to all the world was still a stranger, the person of the stranger, is one of these subjects. And Heidi might have been below, rather than above, the medium-sized colon, although there were moments of intense passion, when his frame actually expanded, and belied the assertion. The light, almost slender symmetry of his figure, promised more of that ready activity which he evinced at the bridge of size, than of that Herculean strength which he has been known to wield without an effort, upon occasions of more dangerous emergency. With the mouth and chin of a deity singular, wild, full, liquid eyes, whose shadows varied from pure hazel to intense, and brilliant jet, and a profusion of curling, black hair, from which a forehead of unusual breadth gleamed forth at intervals all light and ivory, his were features, than which I have seen none more classically regular, except, perhaps, the marble ones of the Emperor Commodus. Yet his countenance was, nevertheless, one of those which all men have seen at some period of their lives, and have never afterwards seen again. It had no peculiar, it had no settled predominant expression, to be fastened upon the memory, a countenance seen and instantly forgotten, but forgotten with a vague, a never-ceasing desire of recalling it to mind. Not that the spirit of each rapid passion failed, at any time, to throw its own distinct image upon the mirror of that face, but that the mirror, mirror-like, retained no vestige of the passion, when the passion had departed. Upon leaving him on the night of our adventure, he solicited me, in what I thought an urgent manner, to call upon him very early the next morning. Shortly after sunrise, I found myself accordingly at his palazzo, one of those huge structures of gloomy, yet fantastic pomp, which tower above the waters of the Grand Canal in the vicinity of the Rialto. I was shown up a broad winding staircase of mosaics, into an apartment whose unparalleled splendor burst through the opening door with an actual glare, making me blind and dizzy with luxuriousness. I knew my acquaintance to be wealthy. Report had spoken of his possessions in terms which I had even ventured to call terms of ridiculous exaggeration. But as I gazed about me, I could not bring myself to believe that the wealth of any subject in Europe could have supplied the princely magnificence which burned and blazed around. Although, as I say, the sun had arisen, yet the room was still brilliantly lighted up. I judged from this circumstance, as well as from an air of exhaustion in the countenance of my friend, that he had not retired to bed during the whole of the preceding night. In the architecture and embellishments of the chamber, the evident design had been to dazzle and astound. Little attention had been paid to the decora of what is technically called keeping, or to the proprieties of nationality. Be I wandered from object to object, and rested upon none neither the grotesques of the Greek painters, nor the sculptures of the best Italian days, nor the huge carvings of untutored Egypt. Rich draperies in every part of the room trembled to the vibration of low, melancholy music, whose origin was not to be discovered. The senses were oppressed by mingled and conflicting perfumes, reeking up from strange convolute censers, together with multitudinous flaring and flickering tongues of emerald and violet fire. The rays of the newly risen sun poured in upon the whole, through windows, formed each of a single pane of crimson-tinted glass. Glancing to and fro, in a thousand reflections, from curtains which rolled from their cornices like cataracts of molten silver, the beams of natural glory mingled at length fitfully with the artificial light, and lay weltering in subdued masses upon a carpet of rich, liquid-looking cloth of chilly gold.
Ha! Laughed the proprietor, motioning me to a seat as I entered the room, and throwing himself back at full length upon an ottoman.
See, said he, perceiving that I could not immediately reconcile myself to the biencence of so singular a welcome, see, you are astonished at my apartment, at my statues, my pictures, my originality of conception in architecture and upholstery, absolutely drunk, with my magnificence? But pardon me, my dear sir, here his tone of voice dropped to the very spirit of cordiality. Pardon me for my uncharitable laughter. You appeared so utterly astonished. Besides, some things are so completely ludicrous, that a man must laugh or die. To die laughing, must be the most glorious of all glorious deaths. Sir Thomas More, a very fine man was Sir Thomas More. Sir Thomas More died laughing, you remember. Also in the absurdities of Ravisius Texter, there is a long list of characters who came to the same magnificent end. Do you know, however, continued amusingly, that at Sparta, which is now Pal, Achori, at Sparta, I say, to the west of the citadel, among a chaos of scarcely visible ruins, is a kind of socle, upon which are still legible the letters 7=9. They are undoubtedly part of +7=9. But now, at Sparta were 1,000 temples, and shrines to 1,000 different divinities. How exceedingly strange, that the altar of laughter should have survived all the others. But in the present instance, he resumed, with a singular alteration of voice and manner, I have no right to be merry at your expense. You might well have been amazed. Europe cannot produce anything so fine as this, my little regal cabinet. My other apartments are by no means of the same order, mere ultras of fashionable insipidity. This is better than fashion, is it not? Yet this has but to be seen to become the rage that is, with those who could afford it at the cost of their entire patrimony. I have guarded, however, against any such profanation. With one exception, you are the only human being besides myself and my valet who has been admitted within the mysteries of these imperial precincts. Since they have been bedizened, as you see, I bowed in acknowledgement for the overpowering sense of splendor and perfume, and music, together with the unexpected eccentricity of his address and manner, prevented me from expressing, in words, my appreciation of what I might have construed into a compliment. Here, he resumed, arising and leaning on my arm as he sauntered around the apartment, here are paintings from the Greeks to Cimabue, and from Cimabue to the present hour. Many are chosen, as you see, with little deference to the opinions of Verdu. They are all, however, fitting tapestry for a chamber such as this. Here, too, are some chefs d'oeuvre of the unknown great. And here, unfinished designs by men, celebrated in their day, whose very names the perspicacity of the academies has left to silence and to me. What think you, said he, turning abruptly as he spoke, what think you? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.